technically I'm ordained as a reverend, so...
Technically I am as well.
Did you just go for the Universal Life Church?
Everybody did that in the 90s. That was a thing.
Yeah. Everybody did that as soon as they talked about it on Friends.
Oh, I did it before Friends. Been on the internet.
You're a hipster reverend. You did it before it was cool.
The Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
But while I'm talking to you guys, I might be looking away from the screen and stuff because I'm painting eyes on lion cubs. This is just about a third of them. Oops,
I just heard loads of bagging and the video hasn't caught up yet.
So there's about a third of them. So I'm starting to paint them. So
they're cool.
I'll be doing that whilst talking to you all.
So welcome, everyone, to the Webcomics Company Podcast. Today on the show, as always, we have our beautiful, intelligent, successful contributors, starting off with me. I'm Luke Ely, and you can read my comic on SwaneeNook.com, and if you go to gplus.to/Luke Ely, you can read the first two chapters of my graphic novel, currently in progress, called Eat the Pig. It is bitchin', etc.
It really is really good, by the way.
Really good. I enjoyed that.
Thanks. It gets more bizarre. It involves cheese smugglers. Anyway, who else is on the show? Well, I'm about to tell you. Why, we're joined by Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
Hello. I am Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com. That's all you need to know at this point.
We're also joined by Zoe Robinson of ZoeRobinson.com.
Hello.
And we're joined by Matt Dyson, not of MattDyson.com. Because
somebody else registered it first. That's the only reason.
I feel your pain. The same thing happened to me. Oh, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. These people stealing domains, and it's not good enough. We should do something about it, form a coalition or some sort of non-governmental organization. I don't know.
Yeah, I wanted a domain that was my name, so my name is now xxyzq67924.com.
And it's catchy. It's so,
catchy. Yeah, it is. And ironically, that's probably already taken too, even though I just did it off the top of my head. No, I'm Matt Dyson of mookio.com and kiozen.com, which is where my portfolio website will be when I properly fix it, because I put it up and it's broken.
Huzzah. Also, I think we should give him a shout-out, because we have kind of forgotten to the last few times. We are usually sometimes joined by James Spence of girlsinspace.co.uk, but he got babies, and now he's not here, so he will be, but not now.
Those babies are really tough to get rid of when you get a proper infestation. I mean,
takes about 20 years.
Laying traps down just doesn't work.
So today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about preparing and, I suppose, printing books. Those are things that people used to read before the Amazon Kindle, which is a thing that people used to read before the Amazon Kindle Fire.
Basically, it's the edition.
Yes. It's like owning a little piece of library. So I guess who wants to start? I think all of us have had experience. I probably have had, in fact, I know that I've had the least. So how about I don't start? Or maybe I should start. Maybe I should just quickly say what I've done and then I'll be finished forever.
How about everybody say what they have done? And then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, all I have done up to this point is essentially like just vote printed out on an A4 printer and stapled together myself, which isn't very much experience. Although I do have quite a lot of experience in publication design as a newspaper production editor. So I guess I can contribute a little. Zoe, why don't you go next?
From my point of view, I've been printing magazines since 94. But the production style for magazines has changed so much in the last few years, I don't think it would probably be appropriate anymore. I mostly produce novels, actual print books, and we're working on putting together our first graphic novel ebooks and putting our graphic novels into print later in mid-next year. So from my point of view, I have experience of taking magazines to print, taking novels to print, and taking graphic novels to possibly printing soon. So whether that's any use for us today is debatable.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Matt, why don't you go next?
Hello. Yes, I'm similar-ish to yourself from the first point of view. When I started going to conventions about 18 months, 2 years ago now, I started by just printing out from the printer, the books that I had, stapling them together. I got into doing more intricate spines myself on the books so they looked a bit more professional, and doing proper front and back covers on a thicker stocked paper, which turned into then a glossy stocked paper, so it looked a bit more professional, just like it wasn't being done at home, rather. But I'm making the move now to not doing it myself at all. I was lucky enough to bump into the wonderful people at Orangutan Press, Orangutan Comics, and I have a publisher now, so it has basically been getting things ready for print digitally and getting them sent across to the publisher for okaying them, so I've got to worry about bleeds and sizings and DPIs and things like that, which is a whole different set of problems. It's a lot easier from a physical point of view, but from a mental point of view, it's a bit hard. It's difficult to explain. There are different set of problems from doing it yourself to having somebody else do the printing for you. but hopefully, come Monday, Tuesday, all the digital work should be finished, and I should have then had some sort of experience on both sides. Luke.
I've been doing the sort of convention circuit, as we've discussed before, since early 2010. And each time I've gone along with some books, which are printed collections of my comics together. I've been doing this self-published, generally. And I think mostly I've been using web-based services where I upload... I create a PDF. That's surprising amount of work it takes to do that. Upload that, send it off, give them lots of money, and then later on, all my books appear in a box which they deliver to my house, and then I try and sell those to nice people at conventions.
Cool. So
it's self-publishing. The short answer is that I'm using the self-publishing route, but I don't actually run things off my rather broken inkjet printer, as Matt has done.
I've broken four inkjet printers in 2 years.
Good grief!
Through overuse.
What do you do to them? They're supposed to last longer than that.
I print several hundred 32-page back and front books out of them before a convention. Several hundred. Yeah, in the last 2 years, I've sold about 400 Moonkyo books.
Oh my god!
And I printed them all myself.
Brilliant!
That's very impressive.
So yeah, that's how I break four inkjet printers.
And at no point you just thought, I should maybe look into some printers, or you did look into it and you just decided not to go with them, or...
Well, my main problem was that they're a ball ache to make. If I factor in my time, at minimum wage, then I'm making nothing on the books whatsoever. But if I ignore my time, as you tend to do when you're a suffering artist and, you know, don't think that you deserve to get paid and stuff, if you completely ignore that, then it's a damn good profit margin. And I was kind of wary of getting rid of that profit margin by going to a printer because you tend to have to chuck large amounts of cash out at once for any sort of decent margin. You either only get like 100 or 200 and the margins are shit. I mean, you end up having to charge more for the product that you really want than you want to charge just to be able to make the profits worth you going to a convention at all. Or you have to buy way more books than you afford to shell out at once, and that was my problem, because not only did I not want to lose the margins on it, but I also didn't want to price it higher than I felt comfortable charging for. That's why I've only really changed up to doing professional printing, going through the publisher route, because my publisher gets better rates at the printers because they put a lot of business their way. And my publisher is also putting forward the printing costs himself, and the risk on that front is his. I mean, he does make some money on the books, but my margin is still decent enough for me, and the books are nice and professionally done, and my time isn't a factor anymore, which is brilliant. And I've used that time to create a few other things that I'm going to be selling at the convention, a few other products and whatnot, which is nice. And yeah, so yes and no.
I forgot what was happening. Somebody else speak. Oh my gosh.
With regard to the cost of publishing, it is significant. And I'm not entirely sure what your publisher must be putting out for your numbers, Matt. Then I'm just thinking, when we're publishing a novel, which doesn't even have any graphics in, so it's all text, it's very quick to lay out for the printer itself. But for 800 books, it's costing us £1,600. And it is a significant amount, so I can only imagine what they're putting out for your graphic novels.
I'll let you guys know off record, but just let's put it this way: it's a 64-page full-color book with full-color interior and exterior at C4 size, so it's decent size
C4.
As well.
It's
kind of halfway between A5 and A4.
Okay. Because I have one of your books here.
Yes, okay, it's see, bigger.
I didn't know there was a formalized size. Oh, it's bigger. I have one of the old ones.
It's bigger than those. The artwork is going to look better in these new books. And the new books are going to be books 1 and 2 of the old ones in one volume. So it's South Africa. It's going to be Moonkeo in South Africa and Moonkeo 95. The book itself, I'm calling it Cute and Silly Fun, a Moonkeo Collection.
Nice.
I want him to go down the old Calvin and Hobbes style collections of, here's a couple of stories, but I'm just going to title the book something generic that kind of encompasses it.
Sounds good.
I have a question actually about that, Matt, and this is it's kind of a bit off topic, but have you, since you're compiling the two books together, have you made any changes? Have you gone back and changed? Are you George Lucasing? Is this Moonkeo special edition or?
I wanted to, but no. No, because I feel very much that there are some things you shouldn't change, and while if I was putting out the early archive before South Africa to print, I probably would make some changes in the same similar way that Jeff Jacks has made changes with his books. He's included the old ones, but he's also redrawn them so he doesn't want to die inside every time he looks at the book. I do that with my earlier stuff, but South Africa is the first storyline that I can actually live with. I can see, I don't like looking at it to a point because I can see very many faults with it and how I would have done it completely differently. And I can see how the art's progressed a lot since then. While it annoys me, I can live with it, and I know a lot of people who have come back to me after conventions and said that they really enjoy it and really love it, and I've had some people, when I've been mentioning the book on Twitter, even though I haven't done a proper formal announcement or anything, they've, you know, asked about the book and told me that they're excited and stuff. So if people seem to like it, then I don't... It always annoyed me that Lucas did the Lucasing of things that people actually enjoyed, and if people actually enjoy it, then... It's kind of out there. I should, if I'm going to put creative effort into something, I should put creative effort into doing something new. People already enjoy Moonkyo, South Africa, apparently. So,
400 books. Sounds like they do. Tiny Mac.
Pretty good indication.
So let's leave them to enjoy it and work and do some new interesting things. You know, if I'm still doing Moonkyo in 10 years, then it'll be an interesting thing to look at the progression.
Yeah. Here's another tangent, and sorry if I'm getting too off track. Just feel free to just tell me to stop. Since redrawing came up there, I have in the past read some blogs and seen on Twitter that people have had to redraw old pages if they're doing a collection of their web comic, because the comics. I'm sure. You know, obviously all of you guys know this, but maybe some people listening don't, that comics that are suitable to go on the web are not necessarily suitable to go into print.
Save so everything maybe we should 300 just DPI. Quickly throw out. Really, really important.
Right, okay. Here's the very quick thing. Luke basically just summed it up in one sentence. 300 DPI, people. 300 DPI is what you need. If in doubt, go higher.
Yep.
Seriously. If ever in doubt, double it. I used to save all my stuff at 600 DPI until I started running out of hard disk space. I tend to save it around 400, 500 DPI nowadays, but I scan at 600 DPI to begin with, because resizing smaller is fine. You can never resize bigger if you want it to look anything worth a damn. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 300 DPI is your aim, and if you're looking at what size 300 DPI you need to be aiming for, think of what the perfect size in your head of a book of your collection would be. Go out, find a book that is the right size, if you know what I mean, and then measure it, and then add 50% on top of that just to make sure, and do it 300 DPI for that. Never, ever, ever leave it to chance, because you will kick yourself down the line.
Yes, you will. And I'm finding that while putting together all of the house in novel form now. Because I thought I had the shape of the comics correct for laying out very nicely with three comics per page and going through the book. But I haven't, because I've got them smaller. So I can fit five on a page, and now you can't read them.
Oh.
One other thing, if you do not have the logo for your comic as a vector image somewhere on your hard drive that is infinitely rescalable, then make that the first thing on your to-do list before you do anything else, before you do any other update. Go get your logo, get a vectorized image of it that you can rescale to any size. You will thank yourself later.
Yep.
Yeah.
Banners from conventions, things like that. I've got a banner at my convention where I've got the Moonkyo logo, and it must be almost a meter across. I couldn't have done that from, you know, just a crappily sketched out Photoshop thing that might be, you know, 1,000 by 1,000 pixels. It's no good if you want to go do a banner for a convention. You might think it's more than enough for everything you need. It's not.
You know the banner at the top of my website? That's the only resolution that image exists in. I want to actually redesign the whole thing and change the logo at some point. So
that's one of the reasons why.
That point I recognize it. But yes, I've discovered tomorrow. I mean, my main problem is that I don't keep images in a regular size, which means that I produce books which are square, which gives me the most flexibility. It's harder to find printers for that. But there are things which I've done which I quite like to put in the book, but just won't fit. And maybe one day I will produce a landscape book and a portrait book and try and squeeze as much into those two as possible. But yeah, there is an advantage to having everything the same shape and the same size.
There certainly is. That's one of the reasons that... Sorry, go on, Luke.
Yeah, no.
Let me just say really quickly, for people who are listening, if you have no idea what we're talking about, DPI means dots per inch. The standard for screens is 72, and the standard for print is 300 or higher.
Yep.
So what happens is, how to make sure that you're getting it right, is when you start up Photoshop and start a new document in it, if you're using Photoshop, that is, it will give you an option to set the DPI 300 or higher, no matter what you plan to do with it. Also, it's a thing to watch out for that people don't realize, because if you set it to a preset, if you have your Photoshop set to a preset where the screen or where the color type is RGB, it will automatically set it to 72.
Yeah, so set it to CMYK.
Just be careful. Yeah, that's another thing, actually. If you're doing a color heavy comic, definitely CMYK. It's just a color mode. The CMYK or RGB, pick CMYK because that's for printers.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You can always tell if the webcomic is starting to think about printing because you'll see the colors change on the website
as the
person starts saving in CMYK rather than RGB.
And the thing is that RGB, if you're using it, can look a little more vibrant on screen, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing you have to remember is that people are going to be looking at your comic on different types of screens anyway, so the colors are never going to always be the same. So make your book for print, whether you're planning to print it or not. Make your comic that's ready to be printed, and then convert it for the web.
Effectively, future-proof yourself.
Mm.
Oh, one thing, though. When we were talking about making your logos vector, anyone who's using just a font effectively has a vector logo. Because fonts
are vector. Yes, fonts are vector.
Also, though, make sure you have a commercial license for the font you're using.
A lot of the
free fonts that you might get off the internet might be free fonts, but you need to check the small print on the free font website that you got. In fact, you're probably best off doing a bit beyond that. A lot of free font websites just steal fonts from absolutely everywhere. Mm-hmm. Get the title of the font that you're using, Google it, and make sure that you do not need a separate license to use it commercially. And if you really like it, then license it. If you can afford it, there are a couple of websites that do fantastic comic fonts. I bought a font about 2 years ago now, called Comic Crazy, that I use for a lot of my dialogue. Fantastic font. There's one website, Comic Craft, I think it's Comic Craft. One of the font websites, anyway, does a font sale on New Year's Day every year.
Oh, nice.
And they always sell every single font on their website for the number of dollars that the year is. So last year, everything was $20.11.
Okay, sorry.
The year before, everything was $20.10. So this year, everything will be $20.12. Do your research beforehand, though, because even the fonts that are on that website that are cheaper, they will put to $20 and whatever cents. But it's a fantastic place to get decent fonts cheap, even if it's just once a year. I got Comic Crazy for $20, I think, and 9 cents back in 2009. Yet it usually costs about $300 to get a professional commercial license for that font, so it saves a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Also, one way to get out of licensing on fonts is to make your own font. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of programs out there that let you create your own font. Because I'm a bit artsy-fartsy and swanky, I have my lovely shiny iPad here, and I've got an application on that which lets me go through letter by letter and using like the vector tools it's gotten there, or free tracing with my finger, I can basically design a font from scratch, and that's what I've done for my new dialogue font.
Is that app called? Sorry.
The app, hold on a second, let me... Hold on, I've got my iPad here, give me a sec. It's the font that I've designed, by the way. If anybody's interested, I will put it... I'll send a copy to Zoe, and I'll get her to put it up on the website, and anybody can use it if they like. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's freeware. You can use it for whatever you like, as long as you let me know if there's anything interesting you're using it for, just because I'm nosy. All right, hold on a second. Art and design. It's called, surprisingly enough, iFont Maker. iFont Maker, yeah. And I know you people on the podcast can't see it, but the people on the podcast can see it. It looks like that, kind of. So you trace out each individual thing, and then you click on upload, and then it formats it into an actual font file for you and gives you a download link.
Excellent.
Very, very interesting. I'm going to look into that.
So that's a lovely way. I think you can as well, yeah. But that's a lovely way to do it, to not worry about licensing for fonts. You've just got to put a fair bit of time into doing it, making sure it's legible and the like. But there do exist desktop options for the PC and the Mac that will do a similar job as well.
Like Scannerhand and Font Maker and things like that.
Exactly. So that's another way to do it. But always make sure if you're going to be using a font for your logo, you need to make sure that you're okay with licensing, because otherwise you could get in trouble down the line.
Well, not just the logo. If you're using your dialogue fonts, your special effects fonts or whatever, if you're using it in a commercial sense and it's a font, you've got to have the right license for it.
Yeah, and a cool. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying a lot of people forget.
Yeah.
Oh, well, just a quick message to anybody else who uses fonts from Blambot, which I do in Swanee Nook. And I started, when I started doing my graphic novel, I used the same font because I quite liked it. It is a good font. It's called Digital Strip. I made sure that I read the thing on Blambot, and what they say is that you are free to use the font if you're doing essentially like indie or small self-publishing, but if you move beyond that level, you'll have to pay a license. Mm-hmm. And when I think it was Matt or somebody mentioned future-proofing earlier, I honestly think that it's worth your time to make sure that you're set for stuff like this, because, for example, when I started making the book, I thought, oh, I might start a Kickstarter, I'll print some myself. Now I'm considering sending it into some agents, and I can't have that font in there. You know what I mean? Unless I'm willing to pay extra money. So it's, you know, for me anyway, and possibly for you if you're thinking of doing the same thing, it's definitely worth my time to create a custom font and work with that, because then there's no worries or no doubts in my head that exactly what I can do with it, because it's mine, I created it.
Yeah. I have to say, Matt's saying he'll put his font out. I made a font for the dialogue font for Life of Naughty Mouse. It's my handwriting font. It's basic and scratchy. It looks like, it's basically, it continues from when I was doing it hand-lettered. I'm going to put that on the website as well. That's in Scannerhand. And one thing, if you're going to use a font maker like Scannerhand, where you have to write out the fonts in a grid and then scan it in, you have to scan that at high resolution. Otherwise, you are going to get the jaggedest fonts ever, and it's going to be horrible.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, that's where my font came from. It's pretty much my neat handwriting font. It's a good way of doing it. It's almost, it's that halfway house between hand lettering and digital lettering. Mm-hmm. It puts that bit more soul into the piece rather than using just an in from somewhere else.
Yeah.
My next Moon Keo storyline is going to be using Keo Freehand, which is the name of my font, because apparently I'm narcissistic and name it after myself.
my font is called Zoe's Handwriting. Set my fonts out.
My webcomic is my name.
All right, fine. I don't win on narcissism.
We all have something there, don't we?
I can't believe it. okay. So, all right. So you've got your comic scanned in high resolution.
You've got it in CMYK. You've got the right font. Now, I suppose we should talk maybe a little bit about actually compiling the pages together into a book, because it's different. There's one. It's one thing is having, you know, just a bunch of image files. Another thing is having a book. Mm-hmm. So from what I understand, printers essentially want PDFs from you, which is a type of document that's essentially a digital book.
Yes.
More importantly, they want a print-ready PDF, which is slightly different when you're doing something for printing than you would normally think. If you've got images and if you're an artist who uses layers in Photoshop or GIMP or whatever, flatten that image before you put it onto the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, nine times out of ten, it'll go through fine. But that one time out of ten will be the time that you're printing and there's been a mess up on the PDF and it prints your backgrounds and nothing else.
I will also say, make sure you check with your printer what they want firsthand, because not all of them will want PDFs. Mm-hmm. The printer that my publisher uses wants everything as one page per file, flattened TIFFs in a certain...
Really?
Yeah. And I had to do that all last weekend. I did 64 pages, last weekend, formatting them all to the right size and whatnot.
The batch processing thing in Photoshop, if you use Photoshop, is very useful.
I did, but right, here's the funny thing. I could have used that if it wasn't for the fact that I screwed myself up a little bit. All my high-resolution outputs of the actual strips that I was using into the print template all had, because when I printed them by hand, you know, at home on my printer, I had a copyright notice on the bottom of every single page, just because that's what I was doing at the time. But with it being a professional book, there's going to be a copyright page at the start of the book. Now I don't need a copyright title on each page. In fact, it looks a bit pissing stupid. So what I had to do is take out the copyright on every single page, but it's in a slightly different place on every single strip. Aww. Unfortunately, that's why I had to go through every single one of them and take them all out, because I make things difficult for myself. That's why we say the whole, if you can at all help it, always, always, always try and plan ahead for every single thing you can think of. You won't think of everything, because there'll be something that will mess you up. But try and think of as many things as you can.
The printing service which I use, which I'm not necessarily going to recommend because they're fairly expensive, is lulu.com, which is a self-publishing thing, and you can upload each individual image, each individual page as an image, which is what I've tended to do. Mm. And also, they then produce for you a print-ready PDF, which you can download from all those images. And you get that before you paid anything, so you can then take that to another publisher, if you like. There are also ways to create PDFs in Photoshop, and there's a great free program called PDF Split and Merge, which is very good for manipulating PDFs, and that's freeware as well. And Lulu is functional. They're also quite quick, but I'm not entirely sure whether they're the cheapest. I've used them before because basically I was quite close to my deadline of when I needed to get the books before the convention, and so they would be taken to it in time.
I have to admit, Lulu are good. They are very fast. Their books are good quality. They are expensive, but all print on demand is expensive compared to traditional print, because print on demand can't do lithograph printing, and that's where it gets cheap. So regardless of where you go, it's going to be about the same price for self-publishing.
You get very much in terms of producing books, there's a volume discount, both in terms of how many you produce and also the relative size of a book. Producing a 64-page book is probably only going to be about 50% more expensive than producing a 32-page book, not twice as much. So there are economies of scale, and this is where it helps to know that you're going to have thousands of people flocking to you at a convention wanting to buy stuff. Because if you can reliably know that you're going to sell thousands, then you use a very large print run and have a fairly low cost per unit. Whereas, if you have, if like me, you expect to sell probably about 50, we have a much smaller print run, and unfortunately that means your margins are smaller. So yeah, economy.
Yeah.
I've always printed in black and white for books because color printing is very expensive.
Yeah, it is.
Really quite inaccessible. At least as far as I can see.
I really wish my black and white artwork was really worth a damn, but doing a very ridiculously cute comic kind of necessitates colour.
Luckily, my comic is...
Sorry.
...than the art, so I can get away with black and white generally. Although I do... When producing comics in black and white, do check that they work in black and white, because you may have produced a comic where you've got a shade of red and a shade of green, which look exactly the same, and then the entire point is lost, and that image will make no sense.
Since you mentioned that, actually, I reckon you should print an entire copy for yourself at home. Which I know sounds like, you know, especially if you're doing like a color book or whatever, it could be like costly. That's a couple of cartridges of ink. But you see stuff when it's printed out that you don't see on screen. There's just something about your brain that you see it in print and it just picks up everything. And you do not want that in your book. It's worth the expense to get a perfect book, especially if it's something that's like, imagine you had a really big book and then there's just this one thing. And it's just ruined it for you. I mean, other people might not notice, but it's just a stupid little mistake.
It's one of the reasons that when I'm doing proofreading for the novels that we print, I always get a copy printed out and read it in hard copy. Because you do, when you're looking at the screen, your mind blanks parts out and you don't notice spelling mistakes and all sorts. And it's true of a lot of publishers. If you ever look at the first print run of some even big name authors like Terry Pratchett, you'll pick up that there are lots of printing errors in his first editions because people have read them on screen and it just doesn't work as well.
If a copy of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone contains a spelling mistake, that means it's the first edition and you are a millionaire, or you could probably sell that for a few thousand pounds.
You're a thousandaire.
Unfortunately, if you pick up a copy of Luke Sower comics and find a spelling mistake, I don't think you're going to get much.
If you pick up a Moon Keo and find a spelling mistake, it's part of the course.
Ooh.
Actually,
if you find one of my books with a spelling mistake, it's on purpose, I swear.
I would go as far to suggest, to be perfectly honest, that when you're doing your first ever book, that printing with a printer is probably not the best way of going. I'd honestly suggest doing prints on your own printer yourself first before doing anything. Not only because you can find all those mistakes, but also because you've got a relatively low cost way of finding out what sort of stuff will sell, finding out what the best way to package that thing is, what the best way to present it is. You can test the waters at conventions a lot more. And it's a dirt cheap way to find that out. Whereas if you're doing that with printed professionally stuff, you don't have the financial freedom to try a lot more things out. My books in the last few years have gone through probably about 5 or 6 different versions of the same books, and each version I was more proud of than the last. But if I'd have done that professionally, then I probably wouldn't have tried more than the first version just because it's so expensive to make the changes. And you get to know your strip a lot more when you've got that hands-on approach from it. And printing itself, hand printing, doesn't have to be as expensive as you think. Print cartridges, for the love of goodness, never, ever, ever buy print cartridges designed for your printer by the manufacturer of your printer. It is the biggest rip-off in the entire world ever. The best thing you could ever... Well, the second best thing you can do is compatible cartridges, usually from eBay. Search by the brand and model number of your printer. Look for compatible cartridges. Get them in the biggest number you can get. Usually, if you spend about 25 quid, 30 quid, you can get a batch of about... 10, 15 sets at least of cartridges for your printer, and they're compatible cartridges that are just as good as any other cartridge that you'll get. In fact, some of them actually have more ink in them than the official versions. That's the second best thing you can do. The number one best thing you can do, and I will warn you, it's you've got to be dedicated and want to do it, because you're going to have to fiddle with the damn thing, is to find a printer. You've got to do the research first, that a CISS exists for. Now, that's a continuous ink supply system. What it is it looks like a normal set of cartridges, but they have little tubes coming out of them, and those tubes go to a reservoir just outside your printer that will sit next to your printer on the same level. It works on a gravity feed. Basically, you fill the reservoirs outside your printer with the ink, and then the ink basically just drips into the printer. Depending upon the printer, you might need to take some of the microchips from some official cartridges, take them off the official cartridges and put them onto the fake cartridges, if you will, for the printer to recognize it. Printer manufacturers do every single thing they can to make these devices not work, which is why you have to fiddle with them sometimes. They're not just plug it in and it works. Sometimes you have to fiddle. But if you're willing to do the fiddling, willing to get it working and keep maintaining it as it works, I was essentially getting the equivalent of 90 pence for a print cartridge.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
And it just makes it worthwhile doing. It means that I could go to a convention with $150.
And just actually as like a quick follow-up on your earlier point of you should print the first ones yourself, I agree with that 100%, because when you're dealing with a professional printer, there's like a temptation to get more books and or like to get a nice round number or something. And your first book, and I don't mean this to sound mean or patronizing or whatever, but it's probably not as good as you think it is. And you'll probably regret buying 50 of them that you'll never be able to sell.
The first time I printed Moonkyo, I printed 30 copies, and I didn't nearly sell 30 copies. I think I barely sold 20, and when I was talking to people in the pub afterwards, I was told that I did really well. When you go to a foot convention the first time, do not expect to sell a thing. That way, whatever happens, you'll be happy with it.
Yeah, never go to a convention expecting... How many copies of my first book I printed?
Go on.
200. It took 200. Me a year and a half to get rid of all of them. And I get rid. I mean, I have the. It wasn't terrible. I mean, the art was okay, and the jokes were the jokes. But yeah, it meant I had to just keep them under my bed for a very long time and slowly sell them. I mean, if you've got essentially capital and storage space, you can, and the belief that you're going to want to sell this for a few years, you can keep things around. But yeah, it took a while. I was fairly glad to see the last of that.
If you can't store them, don't print them.
Yeah.
Which is why something like Kickstarter is quite cool. And I don't have any experience using Kickstarter myself. Have I dropped the call?
No, you're still here.
No, we're still here. We were just listening to you.
Yeah.
I wasn't butting in for a change.
Guys, it looks like we're coming up to the end of the half hour for this. Are you still there?
Yeah, I think we could talk about this for about 3 or 4 hours, really.
We could. I'll show you my
interesting is if just listen to this, sends us any questions that they have over what we said, because I'm sure that there's bits that we've all missed or bits that people would want expanding on. So if anybody does have any interesting things that they want us to expand on, let us know. Drop us an email. It's mailbag@webcomics.co.
It is.
Is it not? Yay, I remembered it. Yay, go me.
And
I
you can find us on Twitter and various things. We're everywhere.
We are.
You can't get rid of us.
You think of a place where probably they're spying on you.
That little red light blinking in the corner of your bathroom, that's me.
Okay, that's probably a good note.
I'm leaving that in the recording.
That is not admissible in court, everybody.
Well, technically.
That's, you know, it's funny because that's all I was thinking earlier when you were like, oh, you can use my phone for whatever you want. I was just picturing that like being played back in court by some like smiling defendant. So yeah, should we wrap it up? Does anybody want to?
Okay, well, do we want to go out with our top tip for publishing?
Enjoy it. I don't know.
That's cool.
No.
Be prepared to do a fair amount of work. It takes, if you have a convention that you're going to and you have a date. And this is really, really me saying this to myself, but do everything in advance because it will take longer than you think. And it gives you more options to do your research, to find a publisher which suits what you need. It's a lot of work, but the satisfaction of seeing your stuff, which you've only ever really seen on a screen before or doodles in your notebook, actually in a physical book in front of you, is wonderful. It really is. And then being able to sell that and people pick it up, flick through and say, this is actually worth money and things like that, that's really good. So be prepared to do a fair amount of work, but it should be worth it.
Right, one quick tip then. If you're going to your first convention or you're basically getting your first ever book ready for printing, take the number of copies that you realistically kind of optimistically think you can sell, half that number and print 10% of that number.
Yeah.
If you sell out of what you print then go and print more next time. But if you do anything else, you could possibly just have lots and lots and lots of books to store in every single cupboard that you have.
I mean, if you could store, print off all your books for a year or for 6 months at once.
Well, not for your first book, I think. I think it's worth just, it's worth rounding down significantly.
Because you can always do a better version of that book. If you sell out, then ask the people that did buy it what they thought, what their favourite bits were, what they didn't like as much. And the next version of your book, improve it. You can't do that with professional prints all the time when you're getting huge runs. Use the advantage of self-printing to improve your work as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. And from a professional printing point of view, I will say this. Never say no when they ask, would you like a copy printed off before we do the entire run to check it? Always say yes to that because you're going to get hundreds and hundreds of them and you are going to find a mistake. So get that proof done first and then check it. Then you can do your proper print run. On that note, shall we say goodbye, everyone?
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening.
Solid joke there. Yeah. Excellent. Good.
Thanks for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. I've been Zoe Kirk-Robinson. With me this week are Luke Healy of SwanneeNook.com.
Goodbye, everyone. Sorry.
It's okay. Luke Searle of LukeSearle.com.
Goodbye, everyone.
And Matt Dyson of MoonKeo at MooKeo.com.
Goodbye, everyone.
And last but not least, James Spence. He's not here, but he's here in spirit at girlsinspace.co.uk. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Yay.
Thank you for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. See you in 2 weeks' time.
What? Sorry, no, my headphones came out, so I missed a couple seconds there, but sorry, what
you
happened?
You said that you're going to do the entire podcast by yourself, and we're going
to... Oh, yeah.
Naked, and we're going to
change the name to All About Luke.
if you don't mind.
It's going to be a live podcast vidcast from your bedroom. You're going to be naked, juggling on a unicycle, whilst whipping a herring round your head with one hand and singing the Macarena, but not dancing.
You know, it's funny that you should say that, because I'm already doing that. So let me just turn the webcam on there and reset.
I am so glad I'm recording this.
Damn it, I always forget that.
Oh, I don't know. You can record whatever you like, Zoe. I've moved to a point in my life where embarrassment is simply no longer a factor in my way of thinking.
And if that's not an intro, I don't know what is.